Hey, Andy, who has the best action hero body of all time?
Oh, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That's a spicy one. Today, we've got time travel, hunky robots, and the birth of an action icon. It's the evolution of movies, and it's gonna be a good one.
From real streams to silver screens, from 1980 to today and in between. They talking best of the best, bring out their favorite guests. Movies from every year, they breaking them down when they pop on the net. Start from the beginning, and every week they get into it. Jack and Andy, Shaq Hope, Cisco and his old homie. Grab your phone and get ready, turn it up like the music. Evolution of movies, evolution of movies.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, my name's Jack Farmer, he's Andy Rossi, and this is the evolution of movies. Andy, how are you feeling today?
Doing great. Doing amazing. Yeah.
This is one of those movies that is a classic, but has been overshadowed by the sequel. Before we talk about that, though, there's probably people who are new to the show who are like, what exactly is this evolution of movies nonsense? Well,
hi, guys. Hi, new people.
Hi, strangers. Well, this is the Evolution of Movies show. What we do is we watch a movie and then we chat about it book club style, but we call it the Evolution of Movies because we always watch a movie that came out 1 year after the last movie we watched. So this season, we went back 40 years to 1983, and then we moved forward a year to 1984, 85. But guess what? We haven't gone that far yet. Still the beginning of the season. We're still in 1984. So we're going to go back to a time when movie theaters had hits like Ghostbusters, Beverly Hills Cop, and of course, Johnny Dangerously.
Ooh.
But we aren't talking about those. We're talking about The Terminator, a movie IMDb describes as a human soldier is sent from 2029, the distant future, to 1984 to stop an almost indestructible cyborg killing machine sent from the same year, which has been programmed to execute a young woman whose unborn son is the key to humanity's future salvation.
Great plot summary.
Jeez, they didn't leave anything out,
Perfect.
Andy. Before we bring in our guest, which I'm very excited to bring on, any thoughts on this one? How did you like going back to see Terminator 1?
I love Terminator 2. As a kid, that was probably my favorite film. I probably watched it all the time. Terminator 1... You know, I'm glad it exists because it brought us Terminator 2. So it kind of like made me go, oh, that makes sense because I was in Terminator 2. So I liked it for that spot. But I don't know. It's definitely 1984.
Yeah, I agree. I was a huge Terminator 2 fan. And going back to see this, it was cool, but it reminded me a lot of when you say like LeBron James is like the best basketball player ever. And the old guy's like, well, you should go watch some Wilt Chamberlain tapes. And then you turn it on and you're like, oh, sure. I mean, he's great, but it's so old and dated now.
That's a great analogy.
So let's bring our guest on. Speaking of going back to the future, we went back. We're not back to the future, from the future to the past, whatever. It's a transition, folks. Just let me roll with it. We're bringing on our old pal, our old partner, ladies and gentlemen, it's James Shippey making the return.
Paul Winfield's great. I thought, Jack, you were going to make some kind of transition from Wilt Chamberlain to James. I'm like, I'm going to see how he does this one.
Well, for people who are watching on YouTube, they may not know this. James is actually about as tall as Wilt Chamberlain.
Oh, yeah.
So, and James,
striking resemblance.
James, you started this show with us. You were here at the very beginning. Then you got super busy doing all sorts of cool stuff. What have you been doing while you've been away?
Well, you know, I've become a journalist. I do radio, so I'm a reporter now and a producer of an AM morning show in Portland, Rose City. So
what's
that's
the
what
name
I'm
of the
doing.
Station?
Oh, it's a KXL. It's an FM station. FM news. We do AM. You're going to make me sign off, aren't you?
Trying.
This is James Shippey, FM News 101. So if you listen to the radio here, you probably have heard that. So,
James was telling us, he's like, listen, I'm creating a credible career as a journalist, so I can't be on your willy-nilly show very often anymore. Gotta do real work.
No, this is fun. This is fun stuff. If you look, when you work local news, my friends, yes, you know the phrase, if it bleeds, it leads.
Yes.
So you need to be able to just kind of chill when you get home. This is fun stuff. Trust me.
Good.
Well, we're glad to have you back. We're going to jump into it. The Terminator, Terminator 1. James, had you seen this movie before, and what were your thoughts going into it for the show?
No, never heard of it. Never. This movie is iconic. It's okay. It's funny. I was speaking to another reporter, Zach. He's actually from San Diego. Really cool guy, and he's actually a movie buff. So I talk movies with him. It's really cool. So he had just seen Terminator a couple years ago, and I told him where I was going to come review this. This movie, you know, obviously we've all seen it years ago, but I think most of us remember Terminator 2 a little more.
Yep.
Because it's kind of a bigger, you know, tentpole action summer film, and it's got like a young kid who's one of the leads. So I think all of us relate to it a little more, especially if we saw it as kids. Yeah. So this is my first time seeing this in years. I'll be honest, it's better than I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great film.
I thought it aged really well. And considering, I mean, obviously, if it came out today, everyone would say, what is this? But considering it came out so long ago, I thought it really held up. And I think if Terminator 2 never came out, we'd probably be talking about this as a classic looking back at it. Now, Andy, this is where we play the game, the big one. This is for all the marbles. And James, we're keeping track this time around this season. So Andy is going to try to guess the Rotten Tomatoes score. And then James, you got to guess if the actual score is higher or lower. No pressure. But right now, the guests are winning, so...
Okay. No so pressure.
No pressure. You know what's going to happen now.
But Andy, what do you think the Rotten Tomatoes...
I was actually very perplexed coming into this podcast today, because Terminator 2, I think, is a brilliant movie, and I would give that high 90s. This came out before that, so I'm thinking the critics hadn't seen Terminator 2 yet, of course, and... 84 Ghostbusters, you just said, came out during that time. I would say the critics really liked this. This was a really fun movie, but I don't think it did as well as Terminator 2 in my head. So I'm gonna go pretty high though, James. I'm gonna say this got an 88. Final answer.
Andy, already using too much brain power for a show like this, but James.
This is the toughest one I've ever done in my life.
Is it what was the number again? 88?
Yeah, I think so.
88 is it's a good solid, like, this is a good movie is what
that's what
saying.
I think. It was a good movie in 84.
I feel like 90 is an up as an all-time great. 80s is like, this is a really good movie. James, do you think that critics thought it was higher than a really good movie, or do you think it was with all the other trash that came out that year?
Because I think Ghostbusters was around 88 or so. So I felt like it was around the same.
87.
Ooh.
87. This is close. You guys, I can't wait to hear your reaction on this. Rotten Tomatoes has it sitting at 100.
Oh my God.
A perfect score. I had to look it up three times. I looked it up again as we were doing this, because I
better than Paddington or Ty's Paddington.
100% Terminator is listed at. Again, I had to look it up. I was like, wait a minute. I can't be wrong. I've looked it up so many times now.
100.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Perfect. I didn't think 100 existed.
I looked it up after this. There's actually a lot of movies with 100%.
Oh. We just haven't done one before.
That's impressive.
And Jack, who picked this one?
I'm going to take credit for it. I can't remember.
It was me.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man.
You picked Teen Wolf. No, I'm kidding. I think I picked that too. We got that next.
That's a classic too. I'm sure it's not 100 though.
No. Yeah. Certainly will not be. So let's get into this movie. But before we do, as always, I want to thank everyone who is listening or watching, whether it be on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, whatever. Hit the like button, share, comment, subscribe. As we grow the show, that's all very important, and it helps us grow the show and get some better guests than this guy that showed up today.
Slumming it over here.
But Let's get into the movie. In the future, robots are just rolling over humans, literally. But the final battle is being fought tonight in Los Angeles, 1984. A naked man built just like Andy Rossi kills Bill Paxton's punk rock friends and takes their clothes. Meanwhile, another much less impressive naked man appears and like steals James a hopeless man's pants. A police officer's gun, some shoes, and a page from the phone book with the whereabouts of Sarah Connor. James, tell us about the characters in this movie and the world that they live in.
I mean, these are iconic scenes in film. I mean, you know, when, you know, even if you've never seen this movie, you've probably seen this clip, you know, of Arnold, you know, coming in all his glory. He's showing it all, isn't he?
Great glutes. I mean, guy's been really working squats.
He definitely squats a lot. Some power cleans.
Thrusts.
Suzanne Summers, what's that one thing she had? It was like the
Thigh Master.
The Thigh Master.
The Thigh Master, yeah.
Yeah, he's the guy that breaks it, you know.
Yeah.
You know. you know, when he does it. But you know, the thing I noticed is like, oh, this is a Cameron film, and you can see, you know, a lot of times with these directors, they reuse the same actors. Shout out to Andy. Mm-hmm. They use the same actors because you see Bill Paxton in there. You see our guy from, I think, from Lionheart. Is it?
Yes.
He's one of the punks.
Saw that. Yeah.
I don't know who the third guy is. Bless his heart.
Yeah,
the thing you remember about him, he's the one that Arnold takes the coat from.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of coat. But, you know, you see them and, you know, he's the thing about Arnold is he's so imposing. He doesn't have to say many words and, you know, he handles his business and gets their clothing from them. And then obviously when we see Kyle Reese, his is so iconic because he's so different. Right. He's like the complete opposite from Arnold. And the way he has to kind of escape and get his tools or whatever he needs, it's more grimy and more like resourceful, so to speak, because he can't use his brawn. He has to kind of use his brains, not taking anything away from Arnold, but you know, he's the Terminator. He doesn't have to do much and he can intimidate people. But it's iconic, you know, seeing them and getting them clothes together. And it's right away seedy LA. And that's the thing with these movies. I think once we live in LA, we kind of get the feel of when we see these LA filmed movies. You know, it's, you know, a lot of it's filmed in a valley, pretty much, for instance, but it's seedy LA, and that's what I love about it. It's just really cool.
They made cops in LA in 1984 look so stupid in this movie. They were just the dumbest people in this movie. And I agree with you, James. I love how they show just how resourceful Reese was in this opening scene and how he couldn't just bully his way into things. He had to figure stuff out. But Andy, I want to talk to you. You're an actor. You've been on screen many times. I want you to walk me through the actor who plays Reese. What would your thoughts be if you're talking through the movie and they say, we're going to start with Mr. Universe naked. Then right after everyone sees naked Mr. Universe, we're going to zoom in on you naked.
I was thinking that actually, and I would place a call to Chris Hemsworth and be like, bro, can you photo double for me? Like, there's no way you can't compete. Or be like, hey, you know what? It'd be great if I had a nice pair of blue jeans and a nice, flannel shirt maybe.
Yeah, if it was me, I'd come from the future, but I'd be wearing the baggiest like sweatshirt. And,
give me like a Nike tracksuit.
that would hit my ego. Because look, what sucks too is Reese is in shape. Like he's in good shape. It's not like he's some schlub that isn't working out. But dude, come on, that's so unfair to do.
He should have been. Yeah, he should have at least been first. Been like, can you at least make me the first nude guy? So at least like people could be like, looking good, and then they could be the second and they go, oh, okay, well this is
right. Now, James, I always like to take this
real quick though, Jack and James. Why are they naked? Like, is there a reason for this? I know in part two they're naked too. Like, why?
Oh, he explained.
They travel with clothes.
Yeah, he does explain at some point in the film. Yeah, I forgot where. He may have explained to Sarah Connor or to the cops. I mean, I'm not giving it away. This movie's like 30-something years old.
Spoiler alert.
But he explains, so he doesn't know, but something to do with the time travel mechanism, like nothing inorganic can come through. It can't be nothing dead, so to speak. So
outside
that's why he couldn't bring any guns.
Outside of a giant robot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like that was just like a very sassy scientist. That's like, oh, yeah. And you can't wear your clothes either. It's like, really? Yeah. Yeah. Really?
Right.
Yeah. They were all just like playing a prank on. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Like, oh, yeah. Totally. You got to go back naked.
Oh, my God. He's doing it. He's really doing it.
Everyone who goes back in time goes naked. Don't you know? Is this your first time going back in time?
And when Arnold's naked, he goes up to, and I love that you caught the Bill Paxton and the Lionheart guy. I was like, Bill Paxton. But wouldn't you be scared to death? This jacked naked man is coming towards you, and they have the audacity to be like, listen, punk. And I'm like, I would have been like, here's my clothes. Here's my car. Here, whatever you need, buddy.
I would have totally, I agree. I would have gotten out of there because I would have thought, he's like, is he on some kind of drugs or something?
Yeah,
he's emotionless,
right.
Just walking naked, and he's just like, dude, this is not the kind of smoke we want today. Let's just get out of here.
Yeah. And the moment before they were getting mad at a guy using a telescope. That was kind of too. I'm like, is there really that much need for a telescope at 3 a.m? Whatever time that was.
I you know what's funny is I was watching this, I always like to take the evil side during this, but I noticed
the evil side.
Think about the Terminator. He shows up, and who does he attack? He attacks some street thugs that are causing problems. But Reese, I mean, he robs an innocent homeless person. James, who's the real bad guy here?
Right. I'm sure when Arnold was looking at his script, you know, he was doing that character breakdown, right? He has a reason for why he's doing what he's doing, right? So in his mind, he's doing the right thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. Well, we continue on, and Reese has a flashback of fighting robots in the future while the Terminator picks up some guns and starts killing Sarah Connors.
Jeez.
Reese finds the right Sarah Connor first and follows her as she sees a news report about people with her name getting killed. This scene, Andy, is kind of where they start fleshing out the characters of everyone in the movie, like the Sarah Connors and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sarah Connor, and what a kind of creepy way to do it. Like, instead of Arnold, like, being like, hey, are you Sarah Connor that eventually is going to have John? You know, he doesn't do any questioning. He just like, Sarah Connor, dead. Sarah Connor, dead. And did you notice one of Sarah Connor's waitress friends says, oh my God, you're going to love this, and sat her down to show that Sarah Connor's been murdered. I love you guys, but if I saw a person named Jack Farmer get murdered, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, Jack, you're going to love this. Wait, sit down. Check this out. Jack Farmer murdered. Like, I don't think he'd be like, awesome.
Violently, in a horrible way in his home.
Horrible way. Well, she kind of was chewing her gun. She's like, you're dead, honey. You know, like, you know, kind of, but it's like, you know, so it's such an 80s thing. You know, they're having fun with it. You know, they're also be working. They're watching TV in the back. You know, they do have a job to do. So
Sarah Connor seemed like a bad waitress, by the way. She was really
she wasn't good.
Literally, my note says Sarah is a bad waitress.
Little kid puts ice cream in her pocket, little punk.
She wasn't very good. She was late to work. Not very good there. I don't know if I trust the future of humanity with her, but James, this is such a frightening thing, the way they approach this. I thought and to Andy's point, how just clinical the Terminator is. Finding the phone book, and I'm just going to go down the list. Bing, bang, boom.
Yeah. Good reason to be unlisted.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I mean, it's so great. I mean, let's not forget about the scene when he goes to get the guns. You know, he's he's telling the guy, just call me, like, you know, F-1463, you know, something, something rocket launcher, you know, and the guy's like, oh, I'm going to have to close early today. You know, the dude's just getting off.
Right.
You know, because this guy, he's like, you know your gun, son. And this guy's another iconic care actor we've seen in all, especially 80s movies. I think he was in Gremlins. He was in all these 80s movies. We don't know his name, but he always plays that guy. Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, he just put, he, you know, he puts the shell in the gun. He's like, oh, you can't do that. And he's like, wrong, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Wrong.
You know, whatever he does in his movies, I can, you know, and blows a dude away. There's something kind of, I don't know if this sounds crazy, but like kind of tactile about how they're like opening the phone book and looking down it. This is like something that we don't do nowadays. Obviously we haven't done in years, or it hasn't been done in years. So, and yes, going there, I was saying there's a very kind of horror trope to this movie.
Yes.
Him going and hunting people down. We'll talk about it more throughout the film. But yeah, and when we get established with Sarah, I like that they establish her as someone as an underdog. You know what I mean? Because, you know, being a waiter, waitressing, that's kind of like a nice first job for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And but some people can't do it, apparently. You just can't. I know I couldn't. I waited tables and it was not good. OK, let's make that clear, you know. I made a little too much conversation.
You're right. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. You're right, though. I even wrote down. Yeah. Arnold reminds me of like Michael Myers or some kind of horror film character. Even like, was it me or did his eyebrows look kind of crazy? Like they were like, I don't think he had any. Like,
it was Kyle at the time, Andy.
Oh, well, I wouldn't know. Look at these bad boys.
Attaboy.
But yeah, he was very scary, very menacing in this movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I agree, this definitely felt more like a horror movie. And it reminded me a lot of how Terminator 1 was more scary, Terminator 2 more action, very similar to Alien and Aliens. Mm-hmm. And how Alien was much more horror movie and Aliens was much more action.
Yeah,
movie.
Atmospheric horror. You're right. Yeah. You go back, it's kind of a horror. It's claustrophobic. But you're right. Once we get to these part twos, it's bigger and better and more guns and action, you know?
Right. Last thing before we move on here, Andy, I want you to talk to me about Sarah Connor's roommates.
Oh, yeah. One was Slider from Top Gun, that guy that comes in. I don't know if you caught that cameo.
Oh, yeah.
This like 80s sleazeball, you know, I don't know what 80s sleazeball, right?
Yeah.
Cocky guy. That girl, the roommate, just loves her headphones. She just loved that Walkman so much. And it ultimately led to her demise. You knew they were going to die, though. Like, spoiler alert, in Terminator 2, two similar characters, John Connor's foster parents, kind of similar. They just always take these, like, jerk-off couples, and they're like, murder them.
But what about the lizard?
Oh, my God, Pugsley?
Yeah.
Yeah. Love the iguana, you mean?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Excuse me. Excuse us.
Pulling back the curtain before the show.
Amphibians said, all over the planet are going to cancel me for making that.
Right?
Reptiles. I sent a text to James and Jack, pulling back the curtain before the show, with the scene with the iguana, because that was just it made me laugh so hard because I was like, why they spent a lot of time on the iguana. And it was probably the cutest iguana I've ever seen. It had a little mouth open, but then we never see it again. I was like, if Terminator kills that iguana, I'm shutting this movie off.
They should have shown that if they were just, you know, like, let's go there. Back then, you know, I don't know how much PETA was into stuff, but just show him blasting, you know, obviously a fake iguana away, just blowing it to smithereens.
I was hoping that the way they win in the end is Pugsley like accidentally hits a button and it kills the Terminator. I was hoping Pugsley was going to save the day in the end. But like, the one thing that creates fear in a Terminator is an iguana.
I thought it was coming back because he had quite a bit of screen time. Like he was in there for a bit.
He was a big character to do absolutely nothing, but.
Yeah,
Andy, we talk about these roommates. The Terminator kills Sarah's roommates and heads over to the club that Sarah is at. Before the Terminator can shoot her, Reese rains lead on the emotionless murder machine before running away. And while hiding, Reese explains who he is and that a nuclear war is coming 40 years from that moment. And Reese confesses he doesn't know if he can stop the Terminator. The chase continues, and the Terminator crashes his car while Reese and Sarah are arrested. James, Reese was born in the future and is led by John Connor, Sarah's unborn son. How is she going to do a gender reveal party now that Reese has spoiled this?
I know, and you can imagine for her, you know, at this point in her life, children is the last thing on her mind, right? So, and, you know, she's just kind of making it through, and now she figures, you know, she's told that, like, she's going to have a son that's going to, you know, save the world. Let's just go back to this, though. When he, when they're in that, there's so much tension in that nightclub, and I was just thinking, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, obviously, when the Terminator came in the club, well, first of all, she had to pay to get in, right? Which, you know, normally a woman will, $450, which I thought was interesting, but at least they gave her the change. I thought, I kept wondering, like, if they're going to give her change or is she going to say keep it?
Yeah.
So she got her two quarters back. But when the Terminator came in, he walked in, I was like, oh, they're not going to ask him. But then she's like, hey, that guy didn't pay. And this poor guy, he didn't even do nothing. He just kind of just, you know, I guess he broke his finger and the dude was out. You know, the dude was like just the same size as him, but you know, he didn't want that smoke, as you said.
No,
he didn't want it, and no one else called the cops or nothing.
I was thinking during that scene actually, because I'm like, how is Reese gonna beat this guy? Like, there's no way. Like, how are you gonna take this guy out? And I thought to myself, why didn't John Connor send himself back? Do we know that? Couldn't he have just been like, I'm gonna go back in time and save you, Mom? Instead, he's like, hey, why don't you go take care of this?
John is the leader of the rebellion, and you don't become the leader of the rebellion without having some brains. And if you got brains, exactly. He's like, well, I'm not going.
Well, you send your soldiers to do your dirty work, right? And the thing is, Reese, like I said, this dude has a real set of cajoles. Okay. Because
we saw.
We saw. they didn't hold back, James Cameron. He's like, look, I'm going to make the most out of this small budget movie. For me, obviously, for him, it was small budget. But, I mean, Reese, he blasts this huge man of this mountain of a man away with his sawed off, which is fine. But you don't know that this sawed off is going to really do that kind of damage to him. But it does. Thank goodness, right? Because that's the only way they could get away.
Yeah. This was really where we see how indestructible the Terminator is, how he's punching through windows and not feeling things and just taking on everything that's happening, even being shot. Andy, this was an interesting thing that happened to me while I was watching this, and I wanted to know if this happened to you. Mm-hmm. Reese says to Sarah Connor, come with me if you want to live.
Yeah.
Obviously said in Terminator 2, but when I saw this, my first thought was, oh, hey, that's a callback to Terminator 2.
Absolutely. And it was, I mean,
it's a great callback, too.
Again, but it wasn't a callback. It was a
call. Call forward.
Call forward.
Call forward.
And poor Michael Biehn. Biehn that plays Reese, like, I mean, Arnold just come with me if you want to live. Just, I mean, Arnold just basically saw that line from Terminator 1. It was like, watch what I can do with this line.
We also find that this is where Reese also explains that it's the machines that start the nuclear war. And
there was one thing I wanted to mention, because I noticed that line and I was like, oh, that happens in Terminator 2. I know Terminator 2 very well. So like seeing like some of the stuff from this movie go to that, it was really nice the way they connected, and not even knowing that I watched Terminator 2 before I ever watched Terminator 1. But one thing I thought was really cool is they had Sarah Connor riding that scooter, and later in Terminator 2, John Connor rides like the dirt bike. And I remember him telling his mullet friend, like, my mom showed me how to ride the dirt bike or ride this, whatever, the scooter. And I'm like, makes sense, because in Terminator 1, she does have a dirt bike or a scooter.
Yeah.
Well done.
So
connecting the dots.
Attaboy.
So after they get into the car accident, the police arrest them. And at the police station, the cops question Reese, who talks about the future war and that the machine was going to lose. So they sent the Terminator back. No one else comes through. No one goes home. The Terminator shows up, says, I'll be back. And back he comes, bringing lawlessness to the law and a trail of broken heroes in his wake. Reese escapes with Sarah, but the Terminator is still on the trail. James, this is the scene I remember most from the movie, from when I watched it. Talk to me about the Terminator just laying waste to the entire police station.
Yeah, no, this is iconic. The only thing I feel bad is, you know, Granddad.
Hey, he went out swinging.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. But he did get his just desserts. But I thought, look, anytime a character says something like, oh, don't worry, there's 30 police officers out here, you're completely safe, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a horror movie right there.
Of course. Yeah. And I always love how he had a cigarette in his mouth all the time. Had this right. back and forth with Lance Henriksen, or his name. Who's another 80s icon.
Jack's favorite from Aliens.
Yeah. Yes, he's got every, you can call him Lance or Bishop, either name in Aliens. Like, either way, like this guy's great.
I was waiting for him to turn and be like, I'm also a robot.
That'd be great. They make eye contact and Terminator just keeps walking.
That'd be so great. Then it's all canon at that point. Yeah. And then we need to get our Terminator versus Alien movie, which I'm surprised we haven't done yet. That's what they need to do. Just go ahead and cross it.
Yeah. Oh, it's coming.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a very iconic scene, because also too, the way that the Terminator is most of the time, this is also after an iconic scene when I believe he's in some kind of hotel room. He's in some hotel room and he has to like nurse his eye.
Yep.
You know, and that's when he has to, which is a totally disgusting and uncomfortable moment to watch. I mean, he's using that, I don't know what that is, some sort of surgical knife sticking it in his eye and all this stuff. Anyway, this is when he puts on those iconic sunglasses. When he comes into the police precinct, he's so calm. Normally you would think he would just come in shooting, guns blazing already, but he just comes in just to make sure, you know, hey, can I speak to Sarah Connor? And you know, the guy's not even looking at him. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and I'm shocked there's no CCTV on this dude like wasting people all day or night, but they don't know that he's the killer, so to speak.
Right.
But when he comes in and busts in the place, once again, this is a horror film. Sarah, she's sleeping on the comfortable couch. And I mean, you know, you think all is lost in this sense. And then obviously Reese is always very resourceful. He gets himself out of the handcuffs right after the cop tells him, hey, watch him. And he's like, yeah, sure. And he closes the door and then he gets, you know,
he gets a knee to the abdomen, and the guy was like out cold.
Yeah, he's out cold.
Right.
Exactly.
He also did not want any smoke that day.
No, yeah, he didn't. No one wanted smoke except Paul Winfield, who wanted the cigarettes. It's an iconic scene. What more can I say? This movie moves at a brisk pace. That's another thing I wanted to say before. This is a 2-hour film, but it doesn't feel like they really waste much time. I mean, there's a lot of action and a lot of suspense. It's a great film, and this is a great scene.
Yeah, Andy, I want you to... One, by the way, I love that they say there's 30 cops here. I don't know about you guys, but I was counting every time he shot somebody. I was like, 1, 2, 3.
They didn't get them all?
No, but you're right. As far as scary goes, you would think the safest place you could be is in a police station, and it takes away any feeling of state. There is nothing that will stop this guy or this machine. And Andy, something that I caught with this, though, that I've never noticed with Terminator movies, because I always thought it was the exact opposite. And that is, Reese says that basically the humans were about to win the war, and that's why they sent the Terminator back. And Reese was sent as a response to the Terminator. I've always thought it was the other way around. I thought the Terminators were trying to get one up on the humans because they were already winning. That changed my perspective of this whole thing.
It is very interesting. And it's crazy to me that John didn't give Reese anything else but himself. Like, I just feel like one-on-one, that's not very fair to be like, the robot versus the human being. So, you know, he could have snuck something in his butt cheeks or something. weapon.
Now, full disclosure, because I was wondering that, why didn't he smuggle something in his buttocks, right? But
that's what everyone's wondering.
Question one.
Could you imagine
on everyone's list?
You get to interview James Cameron and you're like, so, first question.
The butt stuff.
He's like, is this about my new Avatar movie? No.
He knows it, though. Is this about the butt stuff? Part of this question.
Oh, my goodness. nothing inorganic could come through. I was paying close attention because this psychologist was like getting his rocks off. Like he was, you know, he was really enjoying this and mocking this guy who he thinks is like basically out of his gourd. You know, he's like, oh, I'm gonna become famous off of this guy.
He gets his in part two, that psychiatrist.
Oh, is he come back in part two? Yeah. There you go. Oh yeah, because he leaves. He basically leaves. He gets lucky, right? He just kind of walks past the terminal.
Yeah, in part two, Sarah's got like that needle to his throat at one point.
In the loony place. In the, you know.
In the correctional facility.
The correctional facility. I know. That's the iguanas are coming for you. And you know the crazy people are coming for me. So
the criminally insane are going for you.
One part I just learned that, like you just mentioned, Jack, I thought it was the same. Like you just learned that. I didn't realize that till this movie. I also didn't realize they do mention that dogs can sniff out Terminators.
Yeah.
I just thought that was interesting. I'm like, and I thought I was going to see more of that, but it didn't really come up too much. But
it came up once, obviously, but we don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scene. Weird thing to say that they can just tell a Terminator, though.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, Terminators smell like bacon. So under the bridge, Reese tells Sarah about her son, John, and reassures Sarah that she's up to the task ahead. And while recalling a Terminator sneaking into his base and killing everyone, they then go to a motel and build bombs. Speaking of bombs, Reese is single and he says he's always loved Sarah. Andy, walk us through this sex scene.
I knew that was going to happen. Things
slowly. Walk us through it slowly.
Right.
Play by play.
Gently.
It was pretty graphic, I will say. I was watching it with my wife. She actually didn't see much of the movie with me, but for some reason came into the room at this part.
Of course.
What are you watching? I'm like, I don't know. Linda Hamilton's really going for it. Kind of more graphic than I expected for like a sci-fi movie. And there's a lot of hand squeezing. So, and you know, just one and done. So, I mean, just the one time, that was all he needed to put Sean Connor into.
He's got good aim. Apparently,
I thought, you know, and I thought in Terminator 2 that there was more of a, not a love story, but I thought he lasted longer. Not like that.
Oh wow, pun intended.
Okay, Andy. Yeah, well, sorry, Iron Man. I thought they knew
each other a little longer.
He said it was totally his first time, man. Cut him some slack.
Yeah, did he?
I think he alluded to it being his first time.
Yeah, like he's never had anyone, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
So, God. Man, so the teacher sucks.
In that case, Reese, you did just fine.
You did okay. He did good. He did good. Good. And I got to talk about one more thing. I just thought it was so funny in the hotel. Like, he's trying to protect her, and the first thing he does is leave. He's like, stay here. I'll be right back. And he comes back with like all this equipment and like James or Jack was saying, like making bombs. Like, where did he go? I was just kind of wondering, like, I live in LA. I couldn't even tell you, where would I go? Like, do I Home Depot? Do they have bomb material? I have no idea. But he was able to just be like, all right, we're at this hotel in the middle of nowhere. I'll be right back. I'm coming back with a bunch of bombs.
You don't have a guy?
Oh, you do? Introduce me.
I do think it's funny. He's like, yeah, to your point, I gotta protect you. Anyways, start building bombs.
Yeah.
So to stay safe, I want you to handle these explosives.
I remember as a kid though, and I don't know about you guys, but I remember whenever I saw that, I thought it was like food he brought back initially, like when, because it was a grocery bag or. And you know, I remember like thinking like mothballs, like what is that? Like, is it like, you know, is it like, you know, Whoppers, you know?
That would be great if he comes back. He's just got like a bunch of candy and like Pop-Tarts.
we didn't have candy in the future. This is great.
I'm yeah, so wow. excited. Gobstoppers?
We're going to drink soda and watch movies.
Yeah, it's got to be like 80s stuff, though. It's got to be like an RC Cola or, you know, whatchamacallit or whatever. It's got to be like all these kind of random 80s stuff. He's got to be watching TV. In a different filmmaker's hands, he would have came back and been watching something on the 80s, right? Like, you know, Family Oprah, Ties. Family Ties, exactly. Something like that.
He's watching Little Wonder and he's like, no, don't. it is interesting before we move on, James, how awkward must it have been for John Connor to give Reese a picture of his mom, kind of knowing how that's going to pan out, you know? Just mentally, that'd be weird to me to be like, hey, guy that I've only known as a subordinate, here's a picture of my mom.
But here's the fascinating thing of these like future movies, like when there's time travel, it's kind of in a loop. It's happened before, it's going to happen again. And he obviously knows, I'm assuming his character knows that this is his father, right? I don't know.
Right. I assume so. Yeah. Yeah. So as we move on, we get to the final part of this movie. The Terminator shows up and we get a chase down a long tunnel with Reese throwing bombs at the Terminator. They wreck and the Terminator gets run over, but it doesn't even slow the Terminator down. Mm. Terminator continues to pursue until Reese slips a bomb in the truck and blows up the Terminator, and it's still not enough. The exoskeleton rises from the fire like a stop motion phoenix from the ashes. In a factory, Reese uses a lead pipe before sticking a bomb in the Terminator, blowing it in half and killing himself. Half of the Terminator crawls towards Sarah, still hoping to complete its mission. As the machine chokes Connor, she hits a switch and crushes the machine. Later, Sarah Connor drives off into the desert, recording a message to her future son. A young boy takes a picture that would someday end up in Reese's possession. As she says, a storm is coming. Andy, Kyle was there for business and pleasure, but he only did one of those things.
he did what he had to do. You know, he had to go plant his seed, and he did. Because if he didn't, what if, you know what? You never really talk about that. What if he went to the past and had no, like, he's like, not really. She's a pretty terrible waitress. I don't know.
Like he actually says that instead of asking, she's like,
And he just like goes and lives a life. He's just like, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to Palm Springs.
I'm so glad you said that because I literally thought to myself, they said the war's in 40 years. I was thinking, like, what age is he supposed to be? I said, you could kind of live your life out in the past happily if you wanted to. I would be the worst person to send back in time.
Yeah. He gets distracted. Be like, hey, there's this like professional wrestling event out in Palm Springs. Sounds pretty fun. Oh, yeah? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll go check that out.
Yeah, just drive out there.
Yeah, we never saw Jack again.
Yeah, I would be a terrible person to send back in time, James. I don't know about you, but I would have probably just lived out my days. But that said, I want you to talk to me. We talked a little bit about him pulling his eye out earlier on and being a robot. This is where some of the age shows, the stop motion stuff. But again, for the time it came out, this was actually pretty cool, especially considering this was before James Cameron was the unstoppable juggernaut with budgets.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, obviously there's certain points in the film where like, oh, okay, this was made in the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. But I actually think, and you know, it's kind of a throwback when you actually see like the actual effects, like you see, I guess, the whatever the actual robot that they have in real life as opposed to like the stop motion stuff or the CGI, doesn't it look so real and scary still?
So good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it looks really like, great.
When he first turns into that cyborg or whatever you call it, it's scary. It's like, and it looks great. But yeah, like Jack said, once it starts walking, I was kind of like, man.
And you know, it was walking. So, you know, it's fun. Like I say, a horror film. I mean, it's like dragging its feet, but it's still, they're just trying to run. But obviously Reese is injured. You always have to have that. Right. And, and you know, I think this is this third act is like when she, you know, really becomes who she's meant to be. Because at a certain point in the movie, he kept saying like, hey, I get a chance to meet the legend. that like taught John Connor everything, but we can't see that at that moment, and neither can she. But, you know, she's kind of thrust upon it, you know, her own little hero's journey. You know, she has to, you know, out of necessity. If she it was up to her, she wouldn't have to do this, but she has to become the protector for Reese at that point and start using her mind to kill the Terminator, especially when it's half the Terminator left. I don't know if we've gotten to that point yet.
When it's
half the Terminator left, he's still so scary. And yeah. I think she's resourceful. I think us, we would have been done. Because first of all, we wouldn't have been able to fit in between.
Right. Yeah.
You know, once again, a very tactile movie, because when she's kind of crawling in that space, there's no ridges or nothing. It's just all like flat metal, which I think is just fascinating. And she's able to get through and finally press the buttons, which I don't know how she knew those buttons were there.
How about her tagline there, her line? Did you guys catch? You're terminated.
M-effer.
Yeah. I'm like, how is that not like in the, what do you call it? Like the zeitgeist of the world? Like, I'll be back. By the way, we didn't even talk about it because it was so like not a big deal. Like he comes to the police office and police department. Police office. And he just says, I'll be back.
It's very like a throwaway. Yeah.
Yeah. And who knew that would turn into such a big monster line. But her line, I'm like, how do we not say that one? You're terminated, effer.
Well, what I like too is the more you look at this movie and the more you look at Terminator 2, it's almost a shame that this one gets forgotten, because I think it adds a lot to Terminator 2 in things like it makes Sarah Connor a much more tragic character. I think when you just see Terminator 2, you're like, oh, she's a badass and she kills people. But when you see this, you're like, oh, this was not the life she wanted. She was, as James said, is thrust upon her and forced on her, and she doesn't want anything to do with this. It makes her more tragic. But also those callbacks that as viewers we're like, oh, that's fun. They called back. But it also, you could imagine a John Connor saying, have the robot say this so my mom feels more comfortable, because Reese once said that to her. You can almost feel that. Let's do, like, you can see why the Terminator is doing stuff, because it gives a little bit of comfort to him, to his mom. If that makes sense.
You mean humanity, right? Especially humanity. In the second one. Yeah. It's pretty fascinating. I don't know what you have, Andy. I'm kind of drawing a blank. There's something I want to say, but
Jack just made me think about how they kind of, you know, screwed Sarah Connor in part two, though. They send the nice guy that looks exactly like the horror movie guy. It's kind of like, you couldn't have done a little bit of different work on this robot so she's not terrified when she sees him.
Right.
Now that I got to like see part one again to be like, oh my God, yeah, she's going to have PTSD from seeing this psychopath.
And she did. Cause I mean, if we're not mistaken, in the second one, she starts off, like I said, she's considered like insane pretty much. And they're trying to drug her up. And because she's talking about robots coming, I mean, imagine, like I said, if, you know, in real life, if we're hearing someone like that, they think you're crazy. Us as the viewers, we know. And one thing I wanted to say, Jack, is, hey, you talk about these things getting lost in canon. Anyone that like really follows this knows these movies are iconic, but same thing with Alien. Right. If you go back and watch that is a great like film in the canon. But everyone remembers Aliens 2 because it's the action and it moves and it's got all these iconic one-liners and stuff like that. But Alien 1 is a great atmospheric, what you can do with a smaller budget film. As I was looking here, they were saying that Cameron had, I think, only about $6 million. Which obviously that's a lot of money, but at the time compared to his other budgets, you know, that's small. That's him having to rely on story more and make a more intimate film, which is what he did here.
Yeah, very well put together movie. As we wrap it up, my final thoughts here are, it's, again, I guess I'll just reiterate, it's a shame that this one's a little bit lost in history because it is so good. And to the points that, James, you're making, I think it's a good lesson for people who want to make movies and how to do more with less. Again, it's $6 million. I'm not pretending that this is something that people just have in their bank account and can do on their own, but using things to make things look better as opposed to just blowing budgets and whatnot. He definitely had to use his resources well. And also things like saving the exoskeleton till the very end for the big reveal and those kind of things. I thought was, 100 on Rotten Tomato is pretty generous, but overall I think this is a very good movie that I wish got a little bit more respect, even though it did get topped by Terminator 2. Andy, final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, Terminator 2 is the best sequel of all time, but it's only so good because this movie gives it so many things to go off of. Like, I wrote down, do you notice the robot arm at the very end? Like, when that's that we see that later with Miles Dyson in part two.
The great Miles Dyson.
I was hoping he would get a shout out in the first one. I was waiting for it. Like something about like, hey, did you guys hear about that Miles guy? But I guess would he be alive?
He's got a bright future in front of him.
Right.
He's a clever fella.
And like you said, Jack, so this is 1984 and this is the way like special effects looked and how action looked. And it's just insane to me, you know, super props to James Cameron to what, you know, less than 10 years later to make a sequel where like we reviewed Terminator 2 last year and it still like holds up. Like the special effects are amazing. Like the way that robot moves compared to this one, it's like night and day. So just to set up yourself for the next movie to be as amazing as it is. This movie is pretty great, but it's tough because, you know, if you see the second one, you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then you see the first, you're kind of like, well, not quite as cool as the second one, but the second one needed the first one.
Yeah. So
people should definitely check this one out.
And James, you get the last word. What do you say about final thoughts on The Terminator?
Yeah, you know, once again, I was really surprised at how well this movie held up. Like I said, you know, there's so much movies, there's so much content that we all have options to watch nowadays. So sometimes if you think, you know, even with this cast, you think, oh, you go back and watch old stuff. Will it hold up to like the new stuff we see now? And, you know, movies like this, they don't make movies like this that often, you know, or anymore. Or when they do, you do respect them. Cause like I said, if you have a constraint of funds to make a movie, $6 million once again is not, you know, chump change, but you have to focus on story. And, you know, once again, we'll come for the spectacle, but we'll stay for the story. And I think that's why this film became so iconic. And then as you mentioned, Andy, part two is like, you know, you just kind of improve on it. But yeah, I highly recommend this to anyone who wants to see a movie. And Arnold, I mean, let's not forget, I mean, he does way more talking now than in his first few movies in his career. But I mean, what a great performance from him. And he's not even having to say much. Mm-hmm. And he's so iconic in this role, you know, and to play that character multiple times and in so many different ways, you know, hats off to him. And everyone was great in this film.
Yeah. It's funny talking about Arnold as an actor, but you're right. Like, this he's so scary as the Terminator in this, and then to be the Terminator 2 and be like kind of lovable and like, character, it's just, it's a pretty nice acting stretch to be playing a robot with such different mannerisms.
But it is actually, I know people will joke he was a robot, he was emotionless, it's not quote unquote really acting or whatever, but it is. Like, you have to understand the assignment, and he totally understands the assignment. Is he quoting a lot of dialogue and things? No, but he gets what his role is in this movie and he nails it, and it makes it work.
He does great. Is it you know, is it De Niro and Godfather 2? No, but you know, that's not what you want to, you know, it'd be interesting to see De Niro's the Terminator. It'd be very different. Let me tell you. All right.
Like mod, like thing. Current day Robert De Niro.
Yeah, current day. Carpet.
Yes.
Yo, go put that thing back where you got it. You know, it's got to be Goodfellas version. You know,
yeah.
Like, you know, you get it out of here. You know.
Well, before we go, we have a special game we like to play at the end. Now, James, we're going to ask you three questions. I've got a question. Andy's got a question, and the third question is always the same. So I'll start. James, who would win in a fight, RoboCop or Terminator?
Oh, come on. I mean, well, hold on. What? Oh, man, RoboCop or Terminator. Is this like a fist fight or are they using their weapons?
They get the weapons.
I don't know, man. I got to go with Terminator, man. I like RoboCop, but, you know, it's Paul Verhoeven. It's kind of hokey, silly. Terminator's there to terminate, okay? Yes. So unless he's going to stick a dynamite up his tuchus, you know, which he's not going to do. He's going to tell him to drop it and, you know, and Terminator's going to say, no, you know, or something like that.
That's the right answer, because RoboCop still has too much human in him. Terminator's robot. He's ruthless. Mm-hmm. Andy, what's your question?
Yeah, so we talked about it, actually, which is great. So James Cameron did Aliens, and James Cameron did this movie as well. So, James, you're leading a revolution. You get one pick to lead the revolution. You have Sarah Connor from T2, or you have Ripley from Aliens. Who's your leader?
That's a good one.
Man, that is wrong. You know what? Here's the thing. And like I said, I love Sarah Connor, but she's got a little crazy to her, right? So, I mean, she's a little crazy. I mean, rightfully so, right? She has someone from the future and all these, you know, robots coming and all that kind of stuff. I would go with Ripley. I would go with Ripley on this because she can be very even keeled. Some people might think she's off her rocker at times, especially if it's a Paul Reiser character, right? But who played that character so good? I know that's off base, but, you know, he played a real weasel. That's acting, folks. But yeah, I would go with Ripley.
Yeah, correct.
Correct answer. So two for two. Now, James, last question. Outside of the main characters, who is the MVP of the movie? Favorite side character of the movie?
I think we have it in his name right there. Right? Are you talking
about this? It has to be a mind meld of two characters. It's got to be, you know, Lance, Bishop. It's got to be Bishop and Mr. Winfield. Okay, like just them two, they kind of have their little Laurel and Hardy thing, or their Amos and I don't know what you would compare, but they've got a nice little 1-2 thing going, which you throw in there, a little comedy in this serious sci-fi action / horror film. Those would be my favorite side characters.
Love it. Well, that does it for us. We're going to be coming back with the next episode, 1985. We're reviewing Teen Wolf. Then we're going to do 1986's Labyrinth, and then 1987's Over the Top. So a fun little range of stuff there. My name is Jack Farmer. You can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. Andy, where can the world find you?
You can find me at Just Andy Rossi.
And James Shippey, where can the world find you?
You can find me at jshippy2 on Twitter, at jeshippy2 on Instagram, and you can find me on kxl.com if you want to go on the interwebs.
Sign us off, James.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, that's that's a little DJ stuff.
A little combo, a little hybrid.
James Shippey, FM News 101.